name's Kate, I'm an addict. Thanks for the welcome, whoever that was. Okay. I'm so happy to be in Arizona. I love it down here. When the committee called me up to ask me if I would come and speak, what they said was, "Hi, it's blah blah from the committee. We're wondering if you could come and speak at our convention." But what I heard was, "We're wondering if you'd like to leave that cold, rainy, grey place that you live in to come and spend some time in the sunshine in beautiful Arizona with the cactus and all our friendly people." And you get to be of service. I said yes, and then I checked the dates. Sure. Oh, yeah. It wasn't a very hard decision to make. I wanted to say thank you to the committee, wherever you are. There's a few people who've been working really hard this weekend already. And I wanted to say thanks for asking me to come and share with you. It's an honor to be of service today. And it's an honor to be asked to be of service. That wasn't something I had ever experienced before I got clean, in any form. And I wasn't one to keep a commitment or be asked back. I'm going to tell you a little bit about me and how I got clean and what my recovery's been like. I'm not going to talk so much about using. I did it. You did it. We did it. Here we are. I was the bottom of the food chain, so if you can imagine what that looks like for you, that's pretty much what it was for me. And I know that when I came to the rooms, I had had enough. And here's a little thing of mine. I'm just going to get it right out right now. When somebody comes to the rooms of NA and they're a teenager and you call them a kid, I just want to say that that person who's come to the rooms, I don't care how young they are, if they've been out there and they've done what they've done and they're coming here seeking recovery, they're not a kid anymore. I just got to say that. And I know that's a little bit opinionated and you might disagree. And if you're under 18 or 19, come and tell me what you think about that later. But when I came here, I was 17. And I walked into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting and I stayed clean from that day, and I'm 18 and a half years clean today. And I've had a really good life, like a really good life. And what happened for me was I'm Australian. First of all, I'm Australian, in case you're trying to work out what my funny accent is. Because I don't sound like a Canadian really, do I? A little bit. There's a little bit mashed in there. I'm Australian and I grew up in Sydney, Australia. And I grew up I had all the privileges of life. Like there's no addiction or in my family. I come from a, you know, middle of the road, meat and potatoes, brush your teeth and do your chores and go to school. And like I come from a pretty basic family in that regards. And I know that I had this disease from forever. I know when I first got clean, I used to try and work out where I got it from, how I got it, why I've got it. And I reached a point, you know, in that first year of recovery where it didn't really matter anymore. I just knew that I had it, that I've always had it. And I'm so grateful today to know what it is that I have. You know, that's the fantastic thing for me about Narcotics Anonymous is I don't have five different diseases. I just have one disease, and this program treats that one disease with the first step. So I'm really grateful today that this is where I found, because I know if you're anything like me, I was looking for all the loopholes and I would have found them. But when I came into NA and I saw that step one and it said addiction, it didn't say drugs, it didn't say using, it didn't say this drug or that drug or this, or it just said addiction. When it said that, there was no loopholes for me, which I think is a big part of why I came in at that age and stayed here. So I picked up quite young, and what happened for me, how I got clean, was I went down like this, and I wasn't a very smart addict, and I wasn't very resourceful, and I wasn't very crafty. I was kind of cute, but that didn't really get me a whole lot. So. And I was young, but that sort of seemed to get me into more trouble. So what happened for me was that I was at school. I didn't know I had the disease. I knew something was terribly wrong, and maybe it was a mental illness, or I didn't know. I really didn't know. I just knew something was wrong, and it was really wrong. And I'd gone back to school. I had gone through a detox. I hadn't stuck it out because, you know, I didn't know I had a disease, right? So as soon as I was detoxed, I thought I'd be okay. Back to the life, right? Back to the suburbs, back to the family, back to the school. And one day I'm on the school bus and I get talking to the school bus driver. I'm sorry for people who've heard this story before, but this is how it happened. I can't make it any different. Well, you know, NASA called me up and... you'll know if I'm lying. There's somebody who said they would call out bullshit if they heard any tonight, so feel free. So I'm on the school bus, and the school that I went to was in the bush, which is sort of everywhere in Sydney, but it was in the bush, and it was a two-hour round trip on the bus from the train station to the school. So once you're on the bus, you're on the bus, right? There's no getting off. It's like this round trip. So I get on the school bus, and I decide to bombard the bus driver with my life story. As I was wont to do in those days, no containment, right? No containment. And so I get on the bus and I start telling this poor bus driver who can't go anywhere for 2 hours because he's the bus driver. He's, what's he going to do? Pull the bus over? Get off the bus, you scumbag. So I'm on the bus and I start telling this poor guy, you know, my life story. And in those days, and this is how I used to identify myself, I was just the wreckage, right? You know, you hear that thing, carry the message, not the mess. Well, I was just the mess in those days. Like, all I was that mess. That's how I identified myself, you know. I'd, you know, been raped and sexually abused, and I'd lived on the streets, and I'd done this, and I'd done that, and I, you know, sold myself for money, and all these things, right? That's who I was. That's how I identified myself. So I made sure that I told him all the gory details, because I, you know, I wanted to make sure he really knew how tough I was. And, hello. You know, and on and on and on, rah, 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 you know, traumatized the guy, and who can't get away. Perfect, hostage. And before I even knew what that word meant, I had my first hostage. And at the end of that bus trip, we get to the train station, and right before I get off, he looks at me and he says, "I am in a 12-step program. Would you like to come to a meeting with me?" That is how I got the message. Can you believe that? A bus driver. And so it turned out that that bus driver was the son of the headmaster of my school. And they were, his whole family, headmaster included, were in one of the family programs, and they knew all about they knew all about it. And so I went to my first meeting the next day. It was of another fellowship. And I walked in. I had no idea what to expect. It was literally around the corner from one of my dealer's houses, and which I've always found amusing. And I had, because I had no idea this was going on, right? Same block. I had no idea this was going on. Recovery is everywhere. And I walked into the meeting, and it was full of little old ladies, which were about 40 years old. And about, you know, close to the age I am now. And probably dressed fairly similarly. And be careful what you judge. Anyway. I walked in, there was all these little old ladies sitting around, you know, very genteel, you know, little bickies and cups of tea and crocheting and cardigans and very polite, not a lot of swearing. And I walked in, you know, 17, angry, my hair was like coming out in bleached clumps. You know, I'd had infected skin, so my skin was still really messed up and angry. And I walked in and I sat down and I thought, my first thought, of course, like, what can these little old ladies teach me, you know, like these little old biddies. So... But I stayed because I was with the bus driver, right? He was kind of cute. So, which I understand today, like maybe if one of those little old ladies had been the one to carry the message to me, maybe I wouldn't have got it. Like I get that today. I needed the bus driver. So I sit down, I listen to the meeting, and at the end of the meeting, big mistake. They asked me if I wanted to share. And boy, did I have a lot to say. I really had a lot to say because, you know, I've got like the big story, right? So, and then, you know, like just potty mouth. And at the end of all that, after I'd, you know, spread my stuff all over the walls of that meeting, they one of the little old ladies came up to me and she said, "There's a program for people like you." And it's called Narcotics Anonymous. And so, the following week, I found out where Narcotics Anonymous was. The first thing I thought, I remember thinking this, you know, it was, I like the sound of that because it had the word narcotics in it. I thought, there's got to be something good about, and it's anonymous, right? So I guess, you know, you can't get busted. I don't know. So, because, you know, I had all those names, right, when I'd been out on the street. Like, nobody knew my real name. There was, like, all kinds of, you know, names out there for me. So I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting the following week. It was a Friday night. Woohoo, Friday night at NA. And I had no idea what to expect. I just knew that maybe there'd be some narcotics there. And because, I mean, the thought of, like, abstinence, I mean, what's that, right? I just knew that I had a slight problem with this particular narcotic. And, you know, if I could just get it together, then maybe I could, I don't know, get it together. I just hadn't really thought much beyond. So I turn up at my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I walk in, and it's all men. And I was very happy about that. Because, and not because I was going to screw them all, but because, you know, and anyway, I'm not touching it. But because I felt like one of the boys, right? I'd been out on the streets and I'd done what I'd done. And even though I looked like a 17-year-old woman on the outside, like I felt like a, you know, 50-year-old man on the inside. So I walked in and it was all guys and they were sitting around. And they were tough, you know, and missing teeth. And there was this one guy had this big, like, knuckle duster ring on and the tattoos on the knuckles and a Harley outside. And one guy was missing a leg. And, you know, it was the guys. And they looked like tough as guts, these guys. I mean, I totally looked up to them. I thought they were the best ever. I wanted to be just like them. And I sat and I listened to them, you know, because they were tough, they were cool, you know, and I heard the message there. And, you know, we sat around and we smoked cigars and back in the days, and we talked about the steps, you know, and they read out of the basic text. And they talked about the steps and doing service and getting clean. And not one of those people, not one of those men ever came up to me and said, are you sure you've had enough? You know, I drank, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, how do we know you're really, how do we know, aren't you a little bit, isn't it just a, not one of them ever doubted my right or my need to be at that Narcotics Anonymous meeting, you know. And today I'm so grateful for that third tradition. You know, it tells me that the only requirement is the desire to stop using. It doesn't even say that I have to be clean when I first come here. It helps if you stay clean and then you can do some steps. And but you know what, if you're here and you're high, try and come back clean tomorrow. You know, if you've got that desire to stop using, you know, this program's for you too. And that was really all they wanted to know, is that, you know, I had that desire and it wasn't even that honest and it wasn't even that clear and it wasn't even that bad anything. I didn't even know what it looked like to be clean. I wasn't, but you know what, I got to the meeting and I stuck it out and I smoked the cigars and I came back the following week. Now that's the real clincher right there, is I came back to that next meeting. I was welcomed enough that I came back, you know. And just for me, like personally, like I have a bit of a hug thing. I'm going to get it out of the open. Just in the fellowship, in the Sydney Fellowship, we do hug, but we only really hug the people that we're close to. It's not like a given that someone walks in the room and you'd like grab them and rub yourself all over them, you know, and leave a little bit of smell of aftershave for later on. Like, it's not really like that where I got clean, and I'm really grateful for that today, because you know what, I came in and I'd been slipping with a lot of people for money, not much money, whatever you could give me really, which sounds a lot funnier than it was, and I was really broken, and I needed to not be hugged. I needed to not be touched. I needed to not be screwed. I needed to not be bought and sold. I just needed to come to the rooms and hear the message, you know. And I've got to say, leave the newcomers alone. You know, leave them alone. And those, out of those men, you know, like these tough, mean old guys, you know, like one guy lived in a cave for like 10 years, like from these like tough, mean old hermit, biker, you know, tough guys, they never laid a finger on me, you know, they were nothing but gentlemen. They were like some of the finest gentlemen I had ever met at that time. And so I got clean, you know, and I joined that group, and the second week I showed up and they made me secretary. Which to me at the time, you know, it's strange that I had been out and done the things that I'd done, but I was horribly naive. And at the time it seemed like, they were giving me this big, trustworthy position, right? But I understand today that nobody else wanted it. You know, so, and I didn't know how to say no yet, right? I was like 2 weeks clean. So I was like, yeah. And I mean, in the Sydney Fellowship at that time, and I think it's still that way in Sydney, is that the secretary is the key holder. So basically what that meant was they gave me the key to the meeting and it was my job to basically do everything. So show up half an hour before, open the doors, put on the coffee, set the literature out. We have bickies at our meetings, put the biscuits out. And that was my job. And I tell you, I did that job for a year and I was diligent. I never missed a meeting. You know, I took it. It was my first service position in NA and I took it seriously, you know, and I understand today that, yeah, it helped the meeting and the meeting was open, but you know what? It helped me stay clean because it meant that I had to be at that Friday night meeting no matter what, you know, no matter how busy I was, how sick I felt, how, you know, I had to be there no matter what. And I did. I went to that no matter what. And that's one thing for me about recovery today is that I've always come to meetings. Like, I've always come to regular meetings and meetings. Like, I've always come, you know, for me, you know, at 18 and a half years clean, I still do 2 meetings a week. You know, maybe 3 if I'm lucky, and if I'm really busy, maybe 1. But I've always done, like, I've always done a certain number of meetings every week, and it's a really important part of my recovery. So, you know, I did that meeting for a while, and after I'd been clean a little while, and for me, like, understanding that it's a threefold disease, like, there's the physical, you know, emotional and spiritual parts of this disease, it meant that there was going to be recovery in that way too, right? There's going to be physical recovery, emotional recovery, and spiritual recovery. And for me, at 17, the physical recovery came really fast. Like, I bounced back pretty quickly. The skin healed up. You know, I was looking pretty good at 6 months clean. You know, the hair, you know, the bleach grew out and the hair grew back. And, you know, and the physical part of it happened pretty fast to me. And I know today that that wouldn't be the case. But it was the case then at 17. So I bounced back physically pretty quickly, you know, and the emotional part for me took a little bit longer. Sometimes after I got clean, I felt like I was sicker than when I had used because now I was in pain without anesthetic. And I hadn't really felt pain like that before. And people just told me to keep coming back. And I began to hear other people talk about their feelings too. And for me, that was what I identified with. Like, that was the thing. Because I didn't have that big story, right? I hadn't done the trips to Asia and been busted and in the clink and here's my new tattoo. And I didn't have any of those, like, stories. And so what I identify with when I came to NA, and still often today, is the emotional part, is the feelings. You know, it's the being in a crowd and feeling like the only person, that feeling that big hole inside of me. And, you know, after I'd been clean, like, a few months, that was, like, I was like a walking big hole. Like, I just was, like, wide open and in pain, you know. And for me, the emotional part of recovery, I started to feel like I was a little bit more balanced by about 5 years clean, you know. And all this time, like, I'm doing the work, right? I had a sponsor, I'm doing the step work, I'm writing about it, I'm doing service, I'm coming to my meetings, you know, I'm participating in a home group, I'm doing all the good stuff of recovery. But the emotional recovery for me to balance out took a little bit. And I understand today that what I believe is that some of us come into recovery and we're like head, you know, logic, and there's not a whole lot of feelings going on inside. And others of us come into recovery and we're like, feelings everywhere, and not a whole lot of logic. I saw a hand go up over there. And when I came into recovery, I was the feeling type. So I came here and I didn't have like any bloody logic at all. Like, it was terrible. I was like just feeling like all the time. And here's how it would go. I feel, I act. I feel, I act. You know, and that got me into a lot of trouble. Let's just say that. It got me into a lot of trouble. And I spent a lot of time in my recovery, my earlier recovery, acting out from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. Now, I don't think you have to do it this way. Like, maybe, I don't think it has to be done this way, but this is how I did it, and I don't recommend it. So I pretty much ran through, at 5 years clean, I hit a point where nothing worked. I could not come up with a new obsession that was gonna fill the god hole. Like, I tried them all, right? Of course, sex, that was the first one. You know, and then money, and then shopping, and then, well, I couldn't afford that, so stealing, and then, you know, some relationships and work, and I just, Star Trek. Like, I just, like, Star Trek works for a while. It worked quite well. But you gotta sleep and eat sometime. So, I mean, I really tried everything that I knew that, you know, I tried everything, and I was staying clean, and I was coming back. I was coming to meetings, and I knew it was going to get better, but I hadn't really surrendered yet, is what I think had happened. And so I hit a point at 4.5 years clean, 5 years clean, where I was in incredible pain, and I'd literally slept with half the fellowship in Sydney, and a number of inappropriate people. And my two best friends had just left NA. They were done with it. You know, they had come in young like me, but they were done. You know, I'm out of here to have, you know. And I found myself in meetings lonely and hurting and thinking maybe killing myself was a good idea. And that was the start of my what I call my real recovery. Like that, for me, that was when it was a fork in the road, right? It was the start of really surrendering and really working those steps. And oh my God, like those were messy, snot-filled days. You know, there was a lot of crying and fear and realizing that clean time doesn't necessarily equal recovery. You know, that I was 5 years clean, but I was suffering like I'd never suffered before. And so here's what I did, you know. 4.5 years clean. So I went and got some outside help. I needed to do that. I needed to start working on some of my abuse issues in particular. So went and did that outside. You know, got a new sponsor, started a new set of steps, because I guess I had this idea that you just sort of did them once really well. And then you kind of, it's like when you ride your bicycle really fast up the hill and then you just kind of like let go of the pedals and kind of cruise for the rest of the way down. It was sort of like that. But I found out that recovery, well, maybe it works that way for you and you're bloody lucky if it does, but it didn't work that way for me. And I found out that I needed to keep working the steps. And so I started a new set of steps and I made some new friends and I kept coming back. And you know what? Slowly but surely things got better. Things got better. And when I felt like acting out, and this is one of the great things that I had learned, if you have the same kind of behavioral issues as I have or have had, one of the things I learned to do is to sit in a room and go, I feel desire right now. That was one of the things I learned to do instead of like having sex. It was like, I feel desire right now, you know, and I started to develop a relationship with myself. And I guess what I'm talking about is getting the pause between the thought and the action. I never had that in my whole life. Like 4 years old, I was stealing the stamps off the teacher's table at kindergarten. You know what I mean? That's my first memory of school. It's like stealing from the teacher. It's like there was never that pause for me between the thought and the action. And they were so close together, I didn't even know there was. And you know, it started from simple things. Like I used to steal a lot, you know, clean but stealing, which was kind of fun. But I had a sponsor. I knew it wasn't right, so. And I knew I'd have to make amends. So I had this sponsor and she said to me one day, she didn't say to me, oh, you're so bad, you're stealing, like what the hell is wrong with you, don't you know better, la, la, la. She didn't give me that whole speech. What she said to me was, the next time you feel like stealing, I want you to notice how you feel and what you're thinking immediately before you do it. Wow. Who would have thought awareness could bring so much change? And it reminds me of that saying, like change the behavior and the thinking will follow. You know, so I did pay attention and guess what I noticed? I was bored. That was what it was. I was bored. And the next time it happened, I was, you know, I think I was, like there was a whole series of things. There was boredom, loneliness. And these are the feelings that I needed to learn to live with, you know, because they're not going to go away. Just because they're unpleasant, they're not going to go away, you know, and I can't go around them. I have to go through them. So that starting with that awareness, you know, the older women, like in the Sydney Fellowship, there's a big group of what I call my big brothers and sisters that are about 22, 23, 24 years clean. There's a big gang of them and they're strong. And those women, oh my God, they're like, they're strong women, you know, and they've done the work. They've stuck around. They've come to NA. They've kept the clean time in NA. They've come here and supported NA, you know, and they're the trailblazers for me. And I was really lucky that I had this big gang of women. And every now and again, one of those big sisters would come to me and help me. They didn't even know they were helping me. They would just say something like, you sound like you're in pain, maybe it's not working for you. You know, and I would just, I couldn't see that. I understand today that when somebody comes to me today and they say, I feel like using, they don't actually want to get high. They're just in pain and don't know how to say it any other way. Like, I understand that today, but I didn't know that for myself then, you know. So, during that period of time when I had first come in and I really took a good look at NA and asked myself, what do I want from this program? Like, you know, people were talking about things like kids and marriage and houses and careers. I mean, maybe at 17 you did want those things, but they didn't appeal to me in the slightest. They sounded like a big headache. So I really had to sort of think for, you know, what is it that I want? And one of the things that happened for me was that there was this couple, big brothers and sisters, there was this couple who had come in at 18 and they were clean a few years, and they're still clean today. And they were living this life. They had pierced tongues, the two of them. I used to wonder if they would get caught on each other when they were kissing. But does that happen? I don't know. You can tell me about it later. They had pierced tongues and, you know, they rode in this big Jeep. It was before we had Humbers, but it was like this big Humber Jeep sand buggy thing, you know, and they went snowboarding once a year and traveled all over the world, and they had this really, you know, he had big tattoos, and I mean, they were cool and they were hot, you know, and they were clean, and they were living the good life of recovery. And I saw that and I went, that is what I want. You know, I want a bit of that, you know. And so I started to get role models here, and That was one of the things that I realized for myself, that for me personally, for me, what I wanted was, I realized that I wanted to travel. You know, as a person that had never been anywhere before I got clean, I had never even left the suburb where I used. I just, getting on the train was like some big deal, I don't know. I never went anywhere, you know, and I made a decision that I would be overseas at a world convention for my 5th birthday. That was my goal. And it happened for 7, I was overseas, not at a world convention, but I was in New York, which to me was like a world convention, because it was so big and so scary and so many people, and you have to put your hand up to share. And I'd never been overseas. I'd saved up $2,000, which was going to last me a year. And I went through... Yeah, you can see. But that seemed like a good idea to me at the time. And I turned up in New York with my $2,000, and I went through $1,000 in 1 week. Oh, shiny silver jacket. Oh, new boots. Oh, I can eat out at 3 a.m. Oh, sushi all night. You know, and so I chewed through it, but I went to meetings, and that was my first glimpse of this worldwide program. That was the first. I mean, it may not sound like much to you guys because you're in the States and it all started here. But you know what? When in Australia, like, that's a really long way away. That's about 22 hours on the plane. And that was like New York. You know, I'm a theater person. I'm not an actor. I'm a theater person. And for me, like, New York was like the pinnacle of all, you know, it was like Frankie Baby, right? Like, it was... It was the birthplace of a number of things that I held close and dear to me. So for me to go to New York and find out that, yes, there were NA meetings there, and yes, there were people with clean time, and yes, there were young people coming in and staying clean and working the steps. Guess what? They work the steps all over the world. Actually, in Iran, I've been told that they don't celebrate your medallion, like your clean date. They celebrate when you complete the 12 steps. And I've always thought that was a really good idea. So I got to New York, I'm 7 years clean, I'm on top of the world, and guess what, right? I'm young, and it was one of the first times in recovery where instead of going, I'm so young, and I have no friends, and, you know, who am I going to meet in this program? It was one of the, you know, all that, like, I'm so young bullshit, like, it was one of the first times that I actually suddenly opened my eyes and went, I'm young, and I'm clean, and I have this great life ahead of me. It was like, it just started to happen. I just needed to get out a little bit and have a little look around. One of the things that happened in recovery with me was that at 5 years clean, I found out that I had Hep C, the hep. And when I had gotten clean, I really thought, I mean, I'd done some really risky, stupid things, and I really thought I had the clean bill of health. And I heard about this new hepatitis, and there's a lot of it in Australia. And so I thought, after about a year of hearing about it, I thought I'd better go and get checked. And I got checked, and yeah, I've got it, and I'm healthy. Like, I'm got the liver of a bull. Like, I'm healthy, and I know that part of the reasons why I'm healthy with that today is because I got clean. When I got clean, you know, is that I've had a really good life. You know, I cleaned up my diet. You know, I like eat really well. I'm like a fruit and veggie vegetarian hippie schmippy patchouli wearing girl, and I do shave under my arms, and. I don't know why I'm telling you that. It's okay if you don't. Harry's good too. Harry is good. That's just me. But and I find that the longer I stay clean, the more in tune I have become with the person that I really am. You know, I suspect I was always this hippie schmippy vegetarian patchouli wearing girl, like even when I was quite young. Like it's, I mean, I grew up in meat and potatoes land, right? It's taken me a while to, but I find that there's never been a point in this program where I've felt like it's harming me. That would be ridiculous. Harming me or hurting me in some way. And I've never woken up and said, damn, I'm clean another day. I wish I'd used last night. You know, like I've never woken up and said that. I've never felt that way about recovery. I've had hard days in recovery. I had a lot of them. And being clean, you know, the length of time that I am doesn't mean I don't have hard days. I had lots of hard days, and I'm sure there's plenty of those ahead. But I've learned that I'm giving myself a chance, you know, if, like the theme says, the precious present, you know, like being in the moment and being present gives me a chance to feel it, acknowledge it, let it go and move on. Like it gives me a chance to go through that process naturally. You know, I just want to take 5 minutes before I end to just say, talk about life today in recovery and what that looks like. I did all that traveling and I've got itchy feet and I still love to travel. And today I get to travel to conventions sometimes to speak. Sometimes I just save up some money and I go with my little beat up backpack and I live on bread and cheese. And some days I go home to Australia to visit my family and friends and to see my big brothers and sisters in the fellowship there. And I've had a really good life in recovery, you know, and that emotional balance that I was talking about, I have great chunks of that today. I have great chunks, pieces of contentment in my life today. I remember the first time I had serenity, when I experienced it, it was this fleeting thing and it was so beautiful and so clear and so still. I just wanted more, of course. And today I have that in my life. That's not to say I feel great all the time, but I have long periods of time in my life today of contentment where there is not, and I, you know what, I don't have like stuff, like I don't have a whole lot of stuff. But you know what? I have this peace inside of me today, you know, that can't be taken away. And it's not about how much money I have. Thank God it's not about how much money I have in my wallet, because I would never have had any. It's not about the outside stuff. It's the inside, you know, and that's where the work is for me today. Like I'm at a point in recovery where I'm doing the spiritual work and I'm finding the spiritual recovery, moving away from self-centeredness to God-centeredness, you know, moving away from me to God's will in my life, you know, and I pray for that every day. That's a powerful thing. Be careful if you're doing that. I pray for God's will in my life every day, and you know what? It happens in my life every day. You know, and some days that means I miss out on big things that I want. Some days, quite often actually, you know, and some days it means that something amazing that I didn't even see on the horizon just comes whack, you know, and here it is right here. And but I wouldn't have it any other way. And I'm changing, and I'm amazed to say that I thought I would get clean, I would stay clean for a long time, but I was going to have this boring, celibate, poor life and expect to be grateful about it. You know, that's the worst part of all, is I was going to have to be grateful about it. And you know, what I found was an adventure, you know, and the power is in the moment. Is, you know, I can just be in the moment today. I don't know how things are going to work out. I don't know even what's coming my way, but I know that I'm heading in that direction and that I have my higher power with me 24/7, you know, and I've got myself with me and I got a few mates with me as well, you know, and there's some mates that are here in the room tonight that have become part of my life in the last few months, you know, and that path of recovery is wide open, you know, it's wide open. And thank you very much for listening. Thank you.